Hi friends, this is Professor Venkat Iyer again, chapter number 9, challenges faced in training, and there are many of them, right? What's your objective? To understand the different challenges faced in training, understand learning organization theory advocated by Peter St. Jay. Okay. The purpose of HR training is to create an ongoing, effective and efficient organization. Effective in terms of performance, efficient in terms of resource allocation and utilization. Training is an ongoing process that constantly upgrades the technical, human and other skills of the employee. It's not an event, it's an ongoing process. At the core of every training is cognitive understanding, intellectual understanding of the training, observing the training with meaningfulness, converting the inputs into action and in the bargain changing the behavior. The last part is very important, action, right? Obviously, there is a subjective journey by each participant and hence there are challenges faced before, during and after the training. What do you mean by subjective? Each one takes the training in his own way because every individual is unique. Training is about influencing the participants to willingly absorb the training inputs and convert them into change behaviors. One of the most fundamental challenges among others is the influencing aspect of training. Either the trainer is not in a position to influence, or the trainee is not in a position to get influence, he is drawing barriers, or both. In this chapter, we are discussing the various challenges that are faced and finding means through which these could be tackled or managed. The challenges faced in training can be categorized into two parts. A, external to the participant. In that, the first point is schedule. Scheduling the training is one of the most challenging part of the training for various reasons. In scheduling, the dates are announced by the training department in discussion with the top management and the departmental heads, and the timetable is created. Employees are nominated to attend the training program and it is expected that they confirm and attend. We expect this from them. However, many managers feel reluctant to let subordinates take time to attend training. Quite a lot of managers feel that training is a waste of time. It is the subordinate leaving the workplace to attend a training and productive time being lost. The managers feel so because the managers feel that every day counts in terms of their own KRA, their own performance parameters. So they are reluctant to leave the subordinates. Or the subordinates themselves say that I don't want to go. It's a mindset that training eats away productive time of the subordinate. That's what they feel. This erroneous, wrong thinking is rampant. It's there everywhere, practically in every organization, resulting in dropouts in nomination. And in extreme cases, the training itself is being deferred and cancelled. I have come across this in quite a few instances, not many. About say 20 people are nominated and practically 7 or 8 of 9 or all they drop out. It happened in way back in somewhere in the 2005 or 6, one of the trainings I did. Overnight, some 5-6 people dropped out and other people dropped out because they said it's year end and all that thing came up. Then the training manager calls me and tells me 2 days before that we are cancelling the training because it's not worth it in terms of the spend, what we are spending. So we'll defer it for another day. And it got held 2 months later. When it got held 2 months later, I had to revisit the training gap because in 2 months things would have changed. I had to sit with them, modify the whole syllabus and have a new training done. Even on that day, there were dropouts. So this is our biggest challenge, is dropout or no show. The top management and the culture has to be hard driven towards the managers to make them give importance to the subordinate training and follow the schedule. So one should ensure that as much as production, marketing and the functions to which they belong is important on a daily basis, training is also equally important. It's a staple diet which will keep the person going on efficiently. This has to permeate from the top management down the line. The second factor that we face in training is the cost. Organizations struggle allocating budgets to various user departments. Historically, organizations are known to give priority to those user departments that are perceived as creating immediate value, visible value, like production, marketing, logistics, etc. To these departments, they see the value coming in front of their eyes. Production, when the units are being produced, you can see them. Marketing, you're selling, you're getting the money in. Logistics, you can see the movement. But in training, the output of a training is a change of behavior that comes over a period of time that is not tangibly seen. And since they don't see it, there's the buy-in takes long time from the training managers or the HR department to the top management. These are seen as core functions, production, marketing, logistics, but HR is not seen. As a result, HR functions, including training, is usually treated as a secondary priority, resulting in controlling training costs by squeezing the budgets. Thus, the available budget for running a training program is pretty much low. This results in struggle by the training department to get the best trainer and manage other expenses. The only way out for the training department is to assertively maintain a strategic HRM stance with the management and ensure that the budgets are available as per requirements. The buy-in has to take place properly. The third factor influencing the training is rapid changes. Business transitions are occurring quite rapidly with changes in technology and high level of competition. There's a crying need for employees to be trained into adapting to these rapid changes and also to working competitively. The cycle time between the changes is so short that before the trained employee starts delivering, the new changes already arrived. Today, that's the issue we are facing. A training is over to adapt to a new environment. After the training is over, hardly a few months later, a newer environment has come in. So this training becomes redundant, it becomes outdated, it becomes obsolete. Rapid changes is creating this challenge to the training. Now, external to the participant, taking it further, the rapid change, despite all sincere efforts by the training managers, this factor is practically uncontrollable. However, using technology, training costs are optimized by such short cycle trainings and the best is brought forward. So there are various steps of adaptive practices which we follow so that the rapid changes are addressed. At the same time, training cost is brought down and the effectiveness is also done. We are still grappling with this. It's not that easy. It takes time and it takes a lot of skillful understanding. Okay. The fourth is the training in diverse cultures. Organizations are multi-locational. They've got branches and factories in different parts of the country and also the globe. And hence the employees from multicultural backgrounds we have. This becomes a critical factor during training. Every regional culture has its own set of values, attitudes and behaviors. And so one format of training does not fit all. As a matter of fact, in a country like India, where we have number of regional cultures, and in any Indian company, all of us know that we are people coming from different regions who are working there. Although the company may have one single corporate culture, our regional culture also interferes with the way we think, act and do. The role of the trainer is to understand the culture of every person who's sitting there, regional culture, what is driving him or her, and learn to address it in the manner in which they understand it from their point of view. So any Indian trainer, I really salute the trainer in India because of the fact that they have to also adapt themselves to regional cultures. It's really challenging at times. Okay, so this is one thing that is very important for us to understand. Unless the trainer understands the various cultures and customizes his training accordingly, this could be a major challenge. Like it is said, one glove does not fit all. Instead, we need to apply different strokes for different folks. Now we come to the challenges faced internal to the participant. For the participant, the self-concept of age. Some people feel that I'm too old to get trained. I don't need training. Gender. I'm a man, I don't need a training. I'm a lady, I don't need a training. It may be. And professional status. I'm holding a senior position. Why do I need a training? This affects the way he or she absorbs the training. So they may just come, sit there and go because the company has told them to do, maybe. Self-concept is highly internally driven and needs careful handling by the trainer. I can make out, as soon as the training starts, within an hour we come to know who is in this type of a trap. And then My role is to see that they are coming out of it willingly. Spoken and written language, the participant's self-concept about his fluency in spoken and written language is a critical challenge which the trainer needs to identify and manage. Today, when I do training, I have to use regional language when the situation warrants. In certain parts of the country, when I do training, including in Mumbai, I use the local language because many people understand things better in their own mother tongue or the language which they are fluent with. And nothing to feel odd about. Because there was a time long back when we used to feel that training has to be done only in English. Need not be. We can train the people in the way they understand the things. So that's where the buy-in and also the willingness to change will happen. The fluency in spoken and written language is critical. It's very, very important. Connecting happens only when you do this. Body language and paralanguage are other forms of communication hints or cues. It differs from person to person and much is communicated to this. The trainer needs to capture this appropriately. Somebody is sweet talking, very, very disciplined, very, very soft in his approach, but his body language is giving away how arrogant he is. It takes a very skillful eyes or skillful perception to know that this is an arrogant person. Now, he's politically correct in front of 10 people, but one has to know that although he's agreeing to everything, but he's not actually taking action steps to take it further. I come across this very often. We have this mistaken notion that in a society, if I'm very soft-spoken and nice, I'll be accepted. We use that as a tool for not changing. And we say that, look, this is the way I am. And an organization finds it difficult to address such people because they will continue to be very civil. They'll continue to be the way they are, but their body language gives them away. They say, no, we don't need it. Okay. I'm not saying anything against soft language or, you know, being very graceful or something. Body language speaks louder than your words. Body language and paralanguage, the associated language which you have with the body language and your words, they speak a lot. When I say a good morning, you know how good the morning is based on how my body language is aligned to it. All of us know about it. This doesn't need a very high level of education. Any common man can make out this. Family, community and religion to which the person belongs to and how he holds these within himself or herself does become a factor to be considered while delivering the training. We come with our background, the family to which we belong. We have certain do's and don'ts, certain parenting programs are running in your brain. The community to which you belong, the religion to which you belong, all these are factors that we need to take into account when the training is on. Role of social structure in training. By social structure is meant how the organization views the individuals. Whether they view them as individuals or as groups makes a difference in the functioning. When the training audience comprises cross-cultural participants from various countries, this factor needs to be understood and addressed. I would always say that if there is a group of people from one area, one region, you have to have a two-pronged approach. Look at them as a group, which is keeping them together. At the same time, within a group, our organization behavior learning tells us every individual has got his own individuality as well. Just because you belong to the same community as somebody else sitting in the room, it doesn't mean you'll think everything like him or her. So I need to address you separately, I need to address her separately. So the two-pronged approach of treating them as a group, at the same time treating each of them separately is very important. Please refer to Hofstede's model of cultural dimension. This is something which is very, very interesting, which explains how various parameters within a culture are different as compared to the same parameters within another culture. Two countries, A and B. They got five parameters which Geert Hofstede, the person who researched, who did this study on IBM some years back, he propounded five cultural dimensions. Individualism versus groupism, masculinity versus femininity, long-term orientation versus short-term orientation, uncertainty index and power distance index. Now, these five parameters, they identify a culture as per Hofstede's research. So you study the culture in one country or one region. People from that region are coming and working in the company. Similarly, there are people from another region coming and working. We are different from this region. So you study that also, and then you see how they are matching or not matching. I'm not getting into the details of Hofstede's cultural dimensions. You can read it. Broadly, it talks about individualism versus certain cultures promote individual thinking, individual activity, individual expression. Certain cultures discourage that and encourage group expression, group thinking, and group actions. In certain cultures, achievement is a very major value. Masculinity. It is identified with masculine traits. Achievement, aggression, going forward. If you don't do that, you're called a loser. In certain other cultures, they say caring is more important. Sharing is more important. The touch, human touch is important. That's a femininity culture. In certain cultures, there's a long-term orientation. Like in India, we think about investment for 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, and all the long-term orientation. In certain other cultures, they say short-term orientation, short 5 years, 3 years, 2 years, short-term. Uncertainty index. In certain cultures, they accept uncertainty as a way of life. Indian culture is such. In certain other countries and cultures, they say we can't have anything uncertain. Everything should be certain. If there are 10 parameters, all the 10 should be known to us. If one is not known, they will struggle and somehow get the 10th one known. In India, we are just the opposite. We said it's okay and we carry on. Now, good or bad, no comments. Every orientation has got its own pluses and minuses. That is why that community is surviving. Let's be very clear about it. Nobody can call names to the other community saying that this culture is not good, that culture is good. It's incorrect. Power distance index, last parameter is what? Power distance index means the psychological distance between people who hold power and people who do not have power. In certain cultures, people who hold power cannot be approached by the people who do not hold power. The guy at the operation level in a company of that country will find it extremely difficult. It'll be impossible for him to go and talk to somebody who's a senior most person. Even when he talks, he has to create a ritual of talking and only measured talk and back. In certain other cultures, the power distance index is very small, which means the people in power and the people who are not in power, they are informally interacting. It's a work that matters, not who you are in the position of the company, right? As organizations grow and mature, they tend to develop rigid systems and processes and ways of thinking. This happens by default. What do you mean by rigid? Not negative. They've got set processes, set systems. So they continue with that. And once a thing is set, it takes time for it to loosen up and unfreeze and change. And this has an impact on the organization learning. The more rigid the organization to changes, the less would be the willingness of the employees to participate, absorb and transfer the training into effectiveness. Ultimately, the organization role matters in the effectiveness of the training. How much the organization willing to change? The organization change, my dear friends, starts only with the top management. It starts at the top. It has to permeate or cascade down to the juniors. There are organizations which say at the top level, we don't need the training, they need the training. If they undergo the training and you don't go through the changes, you are the policy makers, you are the decision makers, then the training has got no effect. It will become toxic because there is a rigidity to change. Okay. Organizations grow and mature into a competitive status over a period of time. And as a result, they tend to get rigid into accepting newer ways of thinking and doing. Although they may be nominating people for training programs and investing resources considerably, the absorption and the transfer of training could be minimal or absent. Hence the need for learning organization. This is a concept, a new process that has got kicked off in the recent past, which I'll be explaining now. A learning organization is a proactive paradigm consciously created by the company as an attitude to make learning as an ongoing process, absorbing, assimilating, unlearning, relearning, and going higher. In simple terms, a learning organization is one wherein every member in the organization is learning individually. Collectively, the learning is taking the organization to higher levels, and the organization itself is learning how to survive in the market with the competition. A learning organization, in short, is one where there is a constant learning process going on, not just by the conventional training and development, but also overall on a day-to-day basis. everything that is being done is a learning. You get a feedback every day, you're doing something, taking a glass of water or anything you can take, you know, a learning. Everything, there's a learning, so that you improve yourself to higher levels of adaptability. A learning organization considers every activity and process as a feedback, not a failure. Powerful statement. You're running a marathon. You couldn't finish the marathon. You're not a failure. It's a feedback saying that I could run the next marathon in a better way. So a learning organization considers every activity and process as a feedback, as an improvement, not an avoidance, as a growth and not a loss. All powerful statements, right? One of the recent popular models of a learning organization was presented by Dr. Peter Senge, author of the famous book called The Fifth Discipline. Some of you must have read it. The basis of this approach is in times of rapid changes, only those who are flexible, adaptive and productive would excel. The basis of this approach is in times of rapid changes, only those who are flexible, adaptive and productive would excel. Three words are important. When a change is taking place, the flexible ones will find it easy to change. When a change is taking place, the adaptive ones will find it easy to adapt. When the change is taking place, the productive ones would excel. That too when the changes are too rapid. For this to happen, organizations need to discover how to tap people's commitment and capacity to learn at all levels. For this to happen, organizations need to discover how to tap people's commitment and capacity to learn at all levels. All people are committed. The commitment levels are varying. All people have got a capacity to learn. The capacity to learn is also varying. Commitment and capacity to learn is there in all human beings. So this model shows us how to tap on that and raise it. That's all. For Peter Senge, real learning gets to the heart of what it is to be a human. Amazing. All human beings, by their own existence, are learners. This is applicable both to the individual and the organization. As a matter of fact, today organizations are humanizing, making it more human, the whole company. It's not a profit center where you're only concerned about sales and profits and increasing it every year. Organizations are humanizing their cultures and way of working in line with this concept. For a learning organization, it is not enough to just survive, which is more of adaptive learning. What is required is what is called a generative learning. Adaptive learning means I am getting adapted to what is existing. When something new comes again, I'll get adapted. It's an ad hoc type of a learning. Generative learning means I am adapting myself for a thing that is going to happen in the future. I'm generating myself to learn something in which I can adapt for the future. Generative learning enhances our capacity to create. So there are five principles that support Peter Senge's learning organization. This book is all about these five things, or five systems, five principles. Systems thinking, personal mastery, mental models, building shared vision and team learning. From micro to macro, from macro to micro and micro to macro, back again. If you can see the flow. Systems thinking is about the organization. Personal mastery is about the person. Mental models is also about the person. Then shared vision with outsiders and team learning is for the group. Right? Let's see how it works. To lead a learning organization, the leader has to adopt certain roles. If I have to make my organization a learning organization, I need to do a few roles. The leader is a designer. I have to generate ideas. Integrate the ideas into larger picture and create models that work towards generative thinking. The leader has to act as a steward, a person who's giving service. It involves commitment to and responsibility towards a vision. The leader has to manage them as a steward does in a service sector. So there is no ego. You have to do it. Leader as a teacher, the role to influence people into learning and converting the learning into generative thinking is to guide them into the generative thinking process. So now my perspective, author's perspective, the challenges in training are many. As a trainer's perspective, there are two areas that need focus: the organization and its attitude towards training. and the participant and his attitude towards the training. Organization and its attitude, also the participant and his attitude. Usually we focus on the participant and his attitude, but we rarely focus on the organization and their attitude. First, that needs to be calibrated. If an organization doesn't have an attitude towards training, positive attitude, then I think it's wasteful to do any training there. Once the above two are adequately addressed, the other factors given in the chapter may not really be so much of a challenge. Suffice it to say, the willingness of the human beings ultimately surmounts, it overcomes any challenge in training. It is the role of the trainer to constantly calibrate both these ends, organization top management and their attitudes, the participant and his attitudes. Ultimately, the entire onus, the burden of the training effectiveness is in the able hands of a skillful training. And with this, my dear friends, I conclude this module. Thank you for listening. All the best.